David Livingston was a missionary who kind of paved the way for African missions. And he wrote a prayer that I just want to read to you. O Lord, since thou hast died to give thyself for me, no sacrifice could be too great for me to make for thee. Lord, send me anywhere. Only go with me. Lay any burden on me. Only sustain me. Sever any tie, but save the tie that binds me to thy heart. Lord Jesus, my King, I consecrate my life, Lord, to thee. And that was also a hymn that I was able to sing so often at EI. So it's not only a prayer that he wrote, but it's also the prayer of my heart and something that I've prayed to the Lord. You know, Lord, I'm willing. You can send me anywhere. Did not know it'd be to the Middle East, though. If you remember, a few of you may remember, last summer, actually, I tried to go to Peru, and that didn't work out. The Lord knows. So I go to school at North Greenville University now, and there's a team of us that went. There was 14 of us. And when you apply for one of these mission trips, there's several you can choose from, several trips you can choose to go on. This one was like the furthest, the most rural type trip. And I was like, sure, I'll just like put a little check mark beside that. We'll see what happens. And I did not expect anything that came about on the trip. Just to give you an idea of where we came from and where we ended up, you can see we're kind of in the pocket corner there of that country that I can't say. But we were smack dab in the Middle East. We were kind of up in the mountains, so it was a little bit of a higher elevation. Beautiful view. This is actually from the top of the roof that we were, or the roof of the conference center that we were staying at. So the sunsets were pretty cool, and we were able to go up there and see that. But just to give you even more of a perspective of where we were and what it looked like, it was kind of this weird mix between like third world country, but like not at the same time. It's like really hard to describe what it looked like, but it was very much foreign, very much like there was poverty and there was like just trash and, you know, old cars, and it smelled like cigarette smoke just everywhere. But then there was also some nicer parts of the town that we were staying in. What were we doing over there? So, like I said, it was a team of 14 of us from North Greenville University. We were working with a Baptist school over there, and you're probably like, okay, there's a Baptist school over there. I thought this was an Islamic country. It is completely Islamic country. This is a Baptist school that was founded by missionaries years ago, and this is like part of it. It's actually a pretty decent-sized campus. It is a private school. And the great thing about being able to go and work with this school is the fact that they were a Baptist school, therefore we were allowed to share the gospel in a safe environment. However, the opportunity there was greater than you think. In this specific country, when you graduate high school, you have to take a placement test. And that placement test determines basically your future. So the higher the score, the more likely you are to be able to go to college. This test also determines your basically your job, basically how much money you make. It determines either poverty or wealth for you. So Islamic families see a private school as the better education, as we do here in America most of the time, generally speaking. And that is why there are plenty of Muslim students and even the teachers who are a part of the school, whether or not it's Baptist, it doesn't matter. The school runs Monday through Thursday and on Saturdays, Friday being the holy day for Islam, Sunday being the holy day for Christians. So what we did is we traveled there every single day, Monday through Thursday, and a few of us were put together in partners of two or in pairs of three, and We were assigned to a teacher and a grade, and we taught English classes. I had sixth and seventh grade, and I got to work with two of just wonderful people on the team, and also this really great teacher, and I'll talk about her in a little bit. And in the afternoon, we did what is STEM club, I guess is what we would call it here, science, technology, engineering, mathematics. We were able to work with them in the afternoons, specifically the older kids. And if you see in this picture, actually, the majority of them are boys. That was because the older the grade, the Muslim girls are taken out of school to work in homes and basically learn how to raise a household. And that is why most of the time I worked with boys. And so you can see even in our engineering classes in the science club in the afternoons, the majority of them were the upper grade boys. And we did that Monday, we did that Monday through Wednesday. So we had 3 days with them. And it was really interesting because at the end of the week, we did all these experiments or whatever, and they seemed a little bit, you know, random to them maybe, but to us, we had a plan. And at the end, we gave the gospel story to them through basically a story similar to the prodigal son. And that was just an incredible time. These guys have never done anything like this before. They are so smart. They knew exactly what to do. They had just never done anything hands-on like that before. So it was really cool to be able to just work with them and just talk with them, hang out with them. I'd like to talk about this amazing person. I'm not going to be able to share her name. We worked with her so much during the week, and she traveled with us several different places. We went to her home and had a meal. She came with part of our group to go visit another home to have a meal. And she's obviously not a believer, but she was with us so much. She loved us, and she was kind of a translator for us at some point, but she is an English teacher at the school. That's her with her niece in her home, and then that's at the top of a castle that we were able to visit. She's 24 years old, and in this particular culture, you have your betrothed spouse, and she got married a few years ago, and then her husband passed away suddenly after a very short amount of time. So she is now living again with her parents, and really just the way the culture works, the likelihood of her getting married again isn't very likely. So here she is just doing her job as an English teacher, living with her family. But guys, I just want to tell you that she has heard the gospel, and she has seen us. She has spent so much time with us that 1 week and even years passed after this particular trip, and the North Greenville has done this trip several years in a row now, so she's worked with them before. And just if you want her name after the service, I'd be glad to give it to you, because please pray for her. She's incredible, and I don't think she's far from the kingdom. But she was someone that we were able to work with and be with that whole week. Just incredible. And this is just a picture of the school as a whole. So missions for me. What did I gain from this experience? This is my team right here. They're amazing. I want to talk about three different experiences, and I'll have to do it quickly. But this is the teacher that we worked with. Again, I can't give her name. But she was incredible. She, I believe, is a Christian. She wore a cross necklace the whole time that we were there, and just totally fell in love with her kids, taught them English, was able to discipline them like a mom when needed, which is super important, by the way, because those kids are sixth and seventh grade, you know. so, like, she had it all. She was able to just freely give the class to us, and we just took it and ran with it, and totally was able to teach the class. We later found out that was her last week at the school. She had been there for 2 years, and she was moving. And she decided that, and those kids love her so much, she decided that she would give that whole week to us to teach and review English lessons with them. We actually did not teach the last day. My group of kids, or my group of the two that I worked with on the left there, We didn't actually teach the last day because we would walk into the first classroom and they would throw a big surprise party for her and give her gifts, and they were all crying, and we were like, what's going on? And then we found out that it was her last day at the school, which was also our last day. And so we felt like it was best to just let her be with her children, because those kids were just so upset over her leaving, and she was too. And I just saw so much selflessness in her, though, even that whole week, like now knowing that that was her last week with her children that she had been with for years, and she gave it to us, opportunity to teach instead of spending time with them. Like, I know she wanted to do that. So that was one experience that really just touched me. That's all the English teachers and the principal of the school there. So this was incredible. We went to homes in the evening times after we did a full day of school, go back to the conference center that we were staying at, turn around and leave and go to a home for a meal. This was a Muslim family, and they hardly spoke English. We had the vice principal of the school come with us to translate. Let me just tell you something about this culture. The Muslim culture, you walk into the room and you take off your shoes out, you know, for respect. And they show you their house. They show you the feast that they prepared for you. And this isn't all of it, guys. Like, this is a lot of food, and that is like half of what they actually prepared for us. Only six of us showed up, by the way. There was only half of our group, not even the whole 14. And so what they did is they put it on the floor for us. They were making sure we were comfortable and everything. Put all the food there, made sure we had water bottles and everything we needed. And then they left the room. We were like, what's going on? And the translator, she was telling us, she was like this is their culture. They want you to be so comfortable, and they want you to be so welcomed in their home that they don't want you to feel like we have to eat in front of them. They want us to feel so comfortable where we are, and that their home feels like our home, so much so that they're just going to not eat and they're going to just stay in the other room. And we were like, wait, this is like not at all what we wanted. But let me just turn the tables a little bit. What if you were, you had your children in a school and the school told you that there was a Muslim family coming to your house that night for dinner, and that was it? I mean, how would you feel about that? Honestly, we were Americans, Christians, and they knew that, coming into their home, and they totally welcomed us in. The best hospitality I've ever received. Even though they could not speak English, they had smiles on their faces the whole time we were there. Laughing, trying to communicate with us, you know, thanking us for coming, preparing all this food for us. And then they decide that the best way for you to feel comfortable is we're going to walk out of the room. And even though, you know, we prepare all this food for you, and it's not just the food, guys, like they take hours to get ready. They go and get haircuts before we even get there just because they want to look their best for us. That to me just blew my mind. We did... Hesitantly, they did come and eat with us. We did ask that they would come and eat. This is the family. At the end, as we were leaving and they were giving us a bunch of mint leaves and fun stuff like that, we would lay hands on them and we did pray for them. In Jesus' name, we prayed that they would come to know God the Creator as God the Father, and know that God the Father actually loves them uniquely, and so much so he sent Jesus Christ as a sacrifice for us. That's what we prayed. And even though it was not translated, I kept hearing in Arabic, the word for yes is nam, and they kept just saying yes, yes, yes in Arabic over and over again. He even said before we started praying for him that he would understand in his heart what we were going to pray for. And that family was, it was probably the best experience out of my whole week that that I had. And I cannot talk about missions and like how it affected me without talking about my team, because guys, I've never gotten so close to such a small group of people in such a short amount of time. You can see on the left there, that's us in the Atlanta airport heading over, and how much close like we got to each other. It shows you in the other picture there. That was at the end of the week. Just incredible, incredible people. We just had so much fun working together and encouraging one another, and instant unity after we've gone through so many trials together and many airport issues I can't even get into right now without going on a rant. But it grew us and it stretched us and it prepared us and for what we had to do. Just real quickly, I do want to talk about kind of the reality of Middle Eastern missions. If you're familiar with missions, you've probably heard of the 1040 window. The Middle East falls into that window. You can see there kind of the restricted and hostile areas where Christianity is 2% or lower. We were staying in a place where, yes, it was okay to be a Christian, sort of, but it really wasn't like culturally accepted, if that makes sense. It was legal, but not culturally accepted. So you can still get in trouble if you, you know, start talking to the wrong person. I will be honest in saying that probably the question that I've gotten the most since I've been back is, did you feel safe? And if you knew, while we were there, Israel attacked Syria, and there were some issues that we dealt with a little bit. We had some extra questioning trying to get back into the States and customs. But guys, I want to say that that question has almost become offensive to me in a way. And what I mean by that is I felt so much safer over there than I do walking downtown Greenville. I mean, these people are so incredible. They're so hospitable. They see you as their equal. They're a people of peace. They don't have the Lord. And one day, I was on a prayer walk with a few of people from my team. And we were just walking through the school and different classrooms and praying. And I came on this playground right here. with a few of my team people, and our team leader, he just kind of paused for a moment, and he looked at us, and he said, you know, the ones who we really need to be praying for are the little ones, and it's because they have such childlike faith that you just know if the gospel is going to get to anyone, it's going to be these little ones. Statistically speaking, and we all kind of know, the older you get, the less likely it is for someone to convert to Christianity. That's just statistics, international statistics. But the ones that we really focused in praying for were the little ones who can influence their family, influence their teachers, the people that they're around. They're the ones that are going to be the change there. And we walked into those doors right there, and all of a sudden we're in this kindergarten building, and there's kids, you know, all around, and it was just kind of crazy and amazing at the same time, because I'd been with the middle schoolers, and it was kind of a relief to go over there and be with these little ones, because they're so fun and free, and they don't really speak very well English. Apparently I don't either. It's not my major. Actually, it is. I'm just kidding. So it's funny. But we went in and inside the teacher's lounge is, are these teachers, they're hanging out and doing whatever. And they come out and they bring us tea. Okay, they can't speak English and that's fine. But they brought us tea. And here we are just walking through, we were praying. And then all of a sudden you just see them. It's like, you know, I don't watch the Oprah Winfrey Show, but you know how they bring out all the gifts at the end? It's just like one after another with all these gifts. That's like how they were with the tea. It was just walking out of this door, and they're like tea after tea after tea, and we're just flooded with gifts. But it was just, it hit me like right then and there. These people are so loving and so welcoming and so hospitable, and no one's telling them about the gospel of Jesus Christ. I mean, that's just the reality of it. We were there for a week, and even though Christianity is technically accepted, there's no one there telling them about the gospel. And it's so much more than them just not getting to heaven. Like, can you imagine right now in your life living without Jesus? Think about living in a Middle Eastern country without Jesus. That was them. That was the people that we were interacting with on a day-to-day basis. I mean, all of these people, these children, they don't know the gospel. And even if they say that they're Christian, they don't actually truly understand what that means because they've never been told what it means. The only reason why they're Christian is because they're not Muslim. That's the reality of the situation. And so we're there and we see the need, and I feel obligated to tell you about the need because I saw it and I witnessed it. And I can tell you right now, in a Baptist school, there's no one there preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that's just the reality of the situation. And I hate to end it on that note, but I want you to be aware of that. I want you to pray for that because it's important to me now more than ever. I asked the Lord to give me a heart for the Muslim people before I went, and he did. Especially on that day when I went on that prayer walk, that's when I realized, like, I need to be praying for these people. And something you can think about, too, is we were there the week before Ramadan started. And if you're not familiar with the Islamic religion, Ramadan is a 30-day prayer and fasting that the Muslim people do. They're so devoted to it. They go all day without eating anything, and they pray. And they eat after sunset, and they do this for 30 days, go a whole day without eating. So you can imagine them doing their regular life routine, going to school, seeing their kids will eat, but the adults who are devoted to their religion will not. And if you don't participate in Ramadan, you're considered just really dumb. It's really, if you're not participating in that as a culture, then there's really no room for you. And that's going on right now. Ramadan is going on right now. So that's something that you can be praying about. I do have a short video I want to play. It's 2 minutes long. It shows a really great picture of my whole week. It wasn't just filled with tears. It was incredible, and it was so much fun. And one of the people on my team actually made this. It was incredible. But you can see, especially those little ones, as she was working with the first graders or second and third graders most of the week, you can kind of just see their hearts and just kind of what was going on. So thank you so much.
Wow, wasn't that a wonderful two testimonies? What an incredible witness that we all share. If you can bring up the house light, please. We heard two stories, two real stories about two young ladies that went on mission trips, and how not only were they being obedient to God's command for the Great Commission, but what's wonderful is how God's plan actually changed them, changed their perspectives when they went to the two different foreign countries. And that's what is just the beauty of the Great Commission. We're all commanded to go out and share the gospel and make disciples. And in all honesty, there's probably a lot of us sitting in this room right now that say, maybe that's not my calling. Maybe I don't feel like it. Maybe it's I'm just uncomfortable meeting people or sharing the gospel with someone. But the beauty of, and I don't know why he designed it this way, but when we go out and are obedient, which is the greatest form of worship to God, to be obedient and fulfill the Great Commission like Robin and Eden did, you get so much more back than what you think you're going there for. And wouldn't you agree that they just seem like they received more. And that's kind of how it works. Just a couple of weeks ago, I was with a brother here, and we were at our local missions down at the Sterling Center, and we were, it was raining a couple Wednesdays ago. It was just pouring down rain, but we thought, let's just hang out there. And at the time, I'll be honest with you, I didn't really like it. I was kind of just hanging out there. But at the end of it, we had so many people still come up to get the free tacos. I went, gosh, what a blessing it was. So often, when we are obedient to what God calls us to do, like Robin said, he will enable us. Good things will happen, and we're going to receive so much more from it. So thank you both, you ladies, for sharing that. What a wonderful, wonderful witness and testimony that was. Now, along with the two mission trips that we've heard about, part of our missions update to you all is to let everybody know what LifePoint is doing in our foreign ministries. Now, locally, you know, with our VBS coming up that we'll be doing at the Sterling Center, that was an offshoot from basically a connection that we made at the Sterling Center on Wednesdays, where we're straight up discipling, sharing the gospel every Wednesday in this neighborhood behind the hospital there in the Sterling Center. So that's a local mission, and you can see where it's transferred into now us bringing the whole church body to doing VBS there. And by the way, I incorrectly said that that background check to sign up is going to be at the Sterling Center. It's actually here. So I wanted to correct myself on that. But knowing the opportunities that we all have here locally and internationally, I wanted to bring to your attention a little bit more about what efforts LifePoint Church, opportunities for you all with LifePoint Church as being a part of the body here, has with our international missions that we support in India. Now, some time ago, some of you may know this, but I've got to give a real brief background history so we can connect the parts, because as with any type of missions and making discipling, it isn't just going there, giving somebody a track, asking them if they believe, and then say, okay, see you later, check off the list. There's discipling is a relationship building and then teaching someone the love of Christ, and so it's about relationships. So several years ago, we decided that we wanted to get involved in an international missions in India, and we connected with a gentleman whose name is Praveen Chakwarthy. And he is in charge of this called the Siloam's Pastors League. I'm going to go through this really quickly, but you'll just stay with me on it, and you'll see the connection. Now, the Siloam's Pastors League is a group of pastors. Pastor Praveen, his heart is all about the Great Commission. He wants to make disciples, and he wants to share the gospel. And this is in the southeastern part of India, in the Kakinada region, of a state called Andhra Pradesh. Now, we had an opportunity to go there and meet and stay with Praveen, and we learned about his ministry and what was going on there. Praveen's ministry to reach out to people who don't know Jesus, have no idea, this is a heavily Muslim and Buddhist area. He saw, in the midst of him going out and trying to share the gospel, he saw a great need for clean drinking water. And he thought he's got to help these people. So through a Facebook connection, he just went on the internet and he found a ministry here in Greer, South Carolina, called Water of Life. And he approached the CEO of Water of Life, a guy named Roland Bergeron, and basically he said, I need you to come build water wells. Now, Roland, the purpose of Water of Life is they build water wells for the earthly needs of folks, but the moment that they build the water well, their real intention is to go in and share the gospel with the people in the village that they just put the water well in. So the whole thing, you know, bringing the lady to the well, all that kind of works out pretty well. Well, Praveen saw this as a wonderful opportunity for him to reach more and more people. So, fast forward, Water of Life and Praveen connect, and now Praveen is facilitating where the water well should go. And then once the water well is drilled in that village, Praveen and the Siloam's Pastors League, where his real heart is, goes in there and starts converting the Muslims and the Buddhists and the non-believers to Christianity in hopes of turning the entire village to what's called a Christ village. A Christ village is simply where the majority of the people have accepted Christ as their Lord and Savior. They've kicked out all the temples. They've kicked out the temple priest. And they plant a church. They have a leadership in place and a pastor in place. And then they start vocational training to help with more earthly needs for the people of that village. Pretty big thing. All right, in the last 10 years, Water of Life and Pastor Praveen Sailam Pastors League has converted 1,000 villages to Christ villages. It's an unbelievable number, especially knowing it is in a relatively small geographical area. The population is so dense there. So, now we got Pastor Praveen, we've got the Sailam Pastor League, and we have the Water of Life. Now, as they were having much success, Pastor Praveen said, I want to be more systematic about this. I want to do one district, maybe like one county here, or one large city at a time, to turn into Christ villages. So they have systematically targeted specific areas, and when they have that whole area converted over to a Christ village, then they're going to move over to the next area. Now, in the midst of going in and drilling a water well, okay, and then turning the village into a Christ village, you heard a lot about what, you know, Robin's talked about the orphans that she dealt with, and even with Eden talking about these people. A lot of these people don't have any choice. It's either Christianity or a Muslim. It's one or the other. Well, in the midst of India, there are many, many, many orphans. It's just exponentially more because there are so many people there. And to give you an idea of, there is an incredible cultural difference, just like it was in Asia and in the Middle East. There's a lot of similarities too. There are a lot of families who can't afford the child that they didn't want. Or maybe it was the accident. Or maybe they're in a bad relationship. Or maybe, for whatever reasons, and we have it right here in Greenville, South Carolina. Everybody's heard of DSS. Okay, you see it in the paper all the time. It's happening here too. Let's not fool ourselves thinking we don't have orphans here, but we don't have them in the numbers that they have there. Now, if you can imagine an untouchable, in India, the women are liabilities. They're financial liabilities. And unfortunately, in the Indian culture, the dowry system is still in place. So if you have a daughter or a girl, eventually you're going to have to pay somebody to marry her. And if you have no money to begin with, no income whatsoever, and all of a sudden you have four daughters, and you, how are you going to feed them, and what's the hope for them? So a lot of these parents will go, I can't take care of her anymore, I can't take care of him anymore. And they will go and either sell their daughters into prostitution, give them to the temple priest for prostitution there, which has been going on for millennia. I mean, millennia it's been going on. So there's this issue of these kids who, in the midst of their culture and civilization, they're unwanted. Now, Praveen, now this is where the connection is. So Praveen gets a water well. He goes in and he makes a Christ village. And the people in the surrounding villages hear about how he's coming there and giving them free water, free education, feeding them, giving them hope. So as a mother or a father, you go, gosh, I just need to give my kid to Praveen. He'll take care of him. Easy. So this is what's happening, is children with very unique, different stories. Every single one has a very specific story. They hear about the grace, the love that these Christians over 7 miles down the road, and they got a new water well over there, and they seem to be thriving. And here I am, I can't even afford to feed my kids. I'm just going to go over there and talk to whoever Praveen's pastor is at the water well and say, hey, either you take her or him, or I'm going to sell them into slavery, or I'm just going to abandon them. Infanticide is one of the largest, has the highest percentage of infanticides in India than any other country, mostly girls. So now we have Praveen. His heart is to share the gospel and to make disciples. He sees the water of life as an avenue for him to do just that, and it's a great thing. It's a great cooperation. But in the midst of it, this person comes up to him and says, here you go. You either take them, or I'm going to the temple priest and sell her as a prostitute, or sell her to a rock quarry or something along those lines. What does Praveen do? Of course, he takes them. He's not going to turn anyone away. He just doesn't do it. He just will not do it. So, because of the success that Praveen and the Siloam's Pastors League and Water of Life is happening, these situations are arising more and more. Now, for the last 7 years, we have been financially supporting Praveen and the Siloam's Pastors League. And we wanted to be specific about the monies that we all give to Praveen because we could see the work that he's doing. He was doing the Great Commission work. We've got to be careful between great humanitarian work and Great Commission. And that's where we really wanted to focus in on where God, I think, was calling us in our missions ministry to focus in on the Great Commission work. And that's why we support Praveen specifically. But in the midst of this new opportunity, I'll call it, has presented itself to Praveen. So he is getting kids all the time. Generally what he does is he places those kids within one of the pastor's homes. So just think about it. You're a pastor under the Praveen's Pastors League, and you get a phone call, a little cell phone call. Hey, I've got 7 kids. I need you to put in your one room, 400 square foot room house. And that pastor says, okay, bring them on. And all of a sudden, you got these 4 kids that have had emotional, psychological, physical issues the whole time, but he brings them in. So this is growing and growing. So the other day I met with Roland Bergeron, and he is the CEO of Water of Life. And he specifically asked me to bring this to your attention. This isn't any kind of guilt trip or try to guilt you into doing something, but because you don't know about it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And I asked Roland, I said, Roland, this is going to be a nonstop. 1 in every 4 human beings live in India. Think about that. That is a lot of people. So is it ever going to stop? And he looked at me and he just with a smile on his face, he says, it'll never stop, but I can't do nothing. I can't. I just can't do nothing. So basically what's happening is Praveen is bringing in all these children, okay? And they'll age out at around 17 or 18 years old. But in the meantime, he's providing safe harbor for them. He's ministering and discipling them in the way of the Lord. He's clothing them. He's giving them fresh water. In addition to that, though, they go through, if they stay with him the majority of their years, they go through vocational training to learn a trade. So if you're a young lady in India and you don't have a mother or father, okay, the chances of you succeeding in getting married to anyone is extremely low, especially when you hit a certain age. So we have to equip them for their earthly life to have some type of quality of life through vocation. So what they're teaching them there is to do seamstress. So they have all these little shops that they're in, these little sewing machines, and are teaching the ladies and the young men some other skills also to be able to be self-reliant, but also they have grounded themselves in the Lord. Now, one of the wonderful things that Roland spoke to me is that, first, about 1/3 of the children, the first attempt is to reunite them with a family member. So about 1/3 of the children are getting reunited with either an uncle, an aunt, some family member. But of the kids that don't get reunited, that go through the, let's say, 17 years that they're under the care of Pastor Praveen, and they get the vocational training, once they receive a job, they're actually giving back to the Siloam's Pastors League to help the kids that are coming in. So it's kind of this it's a wonderful thing, is where you're, and they're coming in, they're sharing the gospel. They're sharing their experiences like Robin and Eden did today, and it makes an impact on them. But specifically, Roland has asked, and I'd like all of you all, if you could, to please go to the website and see if you could have some financial help for these children. I'll get real with you on some of the, because when we went there, we didn't want to just throw our money away. We didn't want to know where it was going to go, how it was going to help. And one of the things, the hardest things for us in the United States is that we want some type of return on our investment. We're just all wired that way. If I'm going to give money here, whatever. So you have this thing called sponsoring a child with the Water of Life. So you can go to givefreshwater.org. You can go up to the donate, and then specifically on the donate portion, there is, you can hit select a campaign and then rescue kids. Now, there are several campaigns they have going there, but specifically this one is the one that seems to have the greatest need at the moment. The kids are coming in and they don't have the money to feed them, is basically the main thing. Now, there may be other organizations out there that say, okay, well, you can sponsor a child and you're going to get a letter and you're going to get a picture and you're going to get this nice, thank you very much for sponsoring me. I was able to do, you fill in the blank. Well, in all honesty, that's a lot of administrative costs to do that, okay? Probably 50% of what you give goes to you feeling good about what you gave when they send you the letter. You know, I'm just being real with you. So with this, Water of Life, your monies will go directly to the children, and you'll receive updates about the overall progress of the children, okay? It's not one specific child, because just think about it. If you're in one of the homes, the pastor's home, and you pick a child and you send them a backpack, well, what about the three siblings who didn't get sponsored? So there are different donation levels that you can go on to. Now, Roland made it specific. If there's someone here that wants to write a check for $1 million, they'll be more than happy to take it from you. But one of the things that they need is a consistent monthly. Is that guy there? Yeah. Thank you very much. Is that enough zeros? one of the things, though, that they really need is a consistent monthly donation. Now, it costs about $1 a day to feed an Indian child one meal a day. And often that's the best. Well, it's not. Sometimes they'll get lucky and they'll get two meals a day, depending on the money flow. Now, myself and David had an opportunity to actually visit with these children. Well, they're still there, I'm sure. We haven't gone out to India or anything. But the meals that they get is basically there's this big old pot of rice, and then there's this other pot that kind of has this curry gravy sauce with some unidentifiable stuff in it. And basically, they just get a big old spoonful of rice, and then they pour the gravy over it. They eat it with their hands, and then what's really cool is like when they're drinking water. I want everybody to do this when they get home today, or maybe at Sack Lunch Sunday. All right, what you're going to do is you're going to get a bottle of water, you're going to hold it up, and you're going to pour it into your gullet and drink it without touching the cup or the water. So these kids will sit in a big line, and when they need water, they put their hand up, and some other kid will come with a water cup, just one water cup that's full of water, and they just pour it down their gullet because they only have one cup and they don't want to have to clean up glasses. It's really cool. It works out pretty well. All right, I'm getting off track here. So the monthly donations, whether it's $7, $7 a week or whatever figure that you come up, there's some suggested amounts and it tells you how much it is for a total monthly support, clothing, everything for the child. It's about $72 per month. So what I'm asking to do is pray about this. Ask the Holy Spirit what He wants you to do. We're not going to solve the issue, and we're not going to plant a flag and say, hey, we did it. It's not going to happen. This isn't going to go away. But like all of us, we're called to fulfill the Great Commission. How how are you going to help do that? These kids are learning about Jesus, and they're also being taken care of here on their earthly ways. If you want to jump on a plane and go 15 hours to the Middle East and do something, that's good too. But do something. This is pretty easy. We are at $1 a day. There isn't a person in here that can't give up $1 a day. So I'm just asking you, please, go to the Water of Life. Call up Roland. He'll sit down, have lunch with you. He'll tell you the real deal, what's going on there. This isn't a glossy thing. It isn't beautiful, anything along those lines. But there's a definite need there. I can tell you that we have been supporting Praveen, and it's been a blessing. We have seen so much fruit from our monthly support. And we're just asking you all, in addition to what you've already been doing, go to Water of Life, pray about it, think about it, do something. That's all I'm asking. So once again, I want to just thank Robin and Eden so much for sharing. That's kind of the international missions update. I want to encourage you all again, locally here, VBS is an absolute missions field, and I just want to encourage you all to be a part of that locally here. And with that, I'll close us in prayer.
You've been listening to a broadcast from Life Point Church in Greenville, South Carolina. If this ministry has touched your life in some way, we would love to hear from you. Just visit our website at www.lifepointsc.org for more information. Or, if you prefer to reach us by letter, you can write to us at P.O. Box 27036, Greenville, South Carolina, 29616, USA. Until next time, may God bless you as you continue to follow Him.